Hello and welcome to Idaho Senator Larry Craig's first pod chat. Today is January 24th, 2006. I'm Dan Whiting. I'm sitting here in Washington, D.C. with Senator Craig. For those of you that are wondering what a pod chat is, it's a marriage between an online chat and a podcast. It's allowing Idahoans the opportunity to ask questions directly to Senator Craig and for them to hear his answers in his own voice. Last week, subscribers to Senator Craig's biweekly newsletter, E-News, were invited to ask questions submitted through the website. If you'd like to submit questions for future pod chats, please visit craig.senate.gov/podchat.htm. Before we get to questions today, Larry, can you address the topic of the day, which is Judge Alito and his confirmation? We know the Judiciary Committee is voting today on his nomination, and the Senate will immediately begin considering it, assuming he's approved.
Well, Dan, thank you very much. Yes, as we begin this pod chat, I'm actually looking at closed circuit television of the Judiciary Committee. They are about to vote out the president's nominee to the Supreme Court, Alito. It sounds like it will be a party line vote, but I do believe when he gets to the floor and during the course of the week, the debate will take us into a bipartisan vote. He is highly qualified. He's demonstrated that very clearly during the hearings. And so I think for the balance of the week, the vote may come late in the week, but he will be confirmed to his seat on the court.
Great. Well, with that, we have a limited amount of time, so let's dive right into questions from Idahoans. For starters, let's tackle the issue of the National Security Agency listening to conversations between suspected al-Qaeda operatives when one of the parties is actually in the United States. A couple of folks wrote in about this. Dan from Idaho Falls writes, "Do you believe that President Bush was within his constitutional powers when he authorized wiretapping of Americans outside the FISA process? And if so, are there any laws that he cannot violate? And if not, will you support the impeachment process in the House and vote for conviction in the Senate?"
First of all, the president will not be impeached over this issue. This is not a new issue. Presidents before this president have used the very process that he used for surveillance purposes. And of course, post 9/11, at a time when we are truly engaged in a war against terrorism, the president as commander-in-chief has certain latitudes that you do not have in a peacetime environment. Did the president violate the law? I don't know. And I don't think any of us know at this moment. The line is very fine between what the president can do with the FISA process, as was mentioned, and that's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and what he cannot do. But from what I've heard at this moment, he was advised, he was counseled, and he felt it was important to do so. As you know, I've taken some very strong positions against government prying into the into private citizens' lives, and I take very strong positions protecting the constitutional rights of our citizens. Here, there will be hearings and investigations to determine the role played, but I do not believe, from what I know now, that this is an impeachable offense.
Well, great. On another issue of national security, Adam of Idaho Falls writes, "What should the United States stand on recent unsealing of nuclear materials in Iran be?"
Well, clearly, we cannot step back from any nation appearing to be developing nuclear capability. That is an issue that the world stands solid on, and that's nuclear proliferation. If, in fact, Iran is developing nuclear capability, by that I mean the ability to build a bomb, then this is a world problem. And clearly, we ought to lead the international community in saying very clearly to Iran that this is an area they cannot move into. Do they have the right to have nuclear power? Of course they do. That's not the issue. But I don't believe we go it alone on this issue. I think it is an issue of international importance.
Great. Something more domestic, Nell of Caldwell, who's apparently upset with the recent ruling from the Supreme Court on medical marijuana, is asking a procedural question and just wants to know, how can a member of the Supreme Court be impeached, and specifically like the ones who voted to make prescription marijuana for pain illegal?
When you think of a Supreme Court justice, you must think of the ability to remove them like the way we remove the President of the United States. The House would have to move to impeach and set up the scenario after hearings as to the impeachable activity that a Supreme Court justice was involved in, they would then move to impeach. The trial would occur in the United States Senate, just like the impeachment trial of Bill Clinton, and then a vote of the U.S. Senate. To my knowledge, it has happened only once in the lifetime of our republic. So it is a very difficult and rare process. It is usually not the action of a justice by the ruling of a given law. It is the if you will, the lifestyle and a combination of things that would cause a justice to be impeached. And that's why it is a very rare and difficult process.
Great for that clarification. You've been the chairman of the subcommittee with oversight of the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management for over 10 years now. I think almost that entire time you've dealt with user fees on public lands. Richard of Boise has followed this issue closely and is upset with the fees that the Forest Service is charging. And his specific question is, recent oral and written testimony before your subcommittee on public lands and forests clearly documents the widespread U.S. Forest Service practice of illegally charging user fees to enter public lands, even though entrance fees are forbidden by law. What specific steps are you taking to bring the U.S. Forest Service into compliance? And can you give me a date when the U.S. Forest Service will begin to fully obey the law?
For those of us who live in public land states and have public land all around us, user fees are frustrating and in many instances angering. And that's why I have been generally opposed to and voted against users' fees. I have said on a site-specific basis where a service was being provided to the user, extraordinary to the whole of the Forest Service or the whole of a park or something like that, that it might be appropriate. The Forest Service, I think, did get out of a line, and our hearings are now causing them to move to come back into compliance. The broad-based users' fees that the listener is concerned about have largely been eliminated on a forest-by-forest basis and uniformly across the whole of the U.S. Forest Service. They are reviewing now adjustments to be made. We expect them to be in full compliance by fall. We're pushing them very hard to do so, to get into compliance with the law. Our hearings demonstrated just exactly what the listener recognized, that they were out of compliance. They are now moving to be so. We will continue to monitor it closely and hold hearings to make sure they get into compliance.
Great. I think we all know agriculture continues to be an important part of Idaho's economy and our way of life. The Farm Bill is arguably the most important issue at the federal level for farmers, and work on that reauthorization is going to start again this year. Lynn of Boise would like to know, how will Idaho agriculture and water issues be addressed in the new Farm Bill?
Well, the Farm Bureau, the Farm Bill that is reauthorized on every 5 years is an important part of government policy as it relates to American agriculture. And last year, the Secretary was out and about the nation holding hearings at state fairs. The Ag Committee has been holding some hearings, and the Farm Bill will be rewritten basically starting this year, but authorized and into law by 07. I can't at this moment say specifically how will agriculture be treated in Idaho. I think we will get into the Farm Bill this coming year, a new provision called specialty crops that I've spearheaded and moved out on, because Idaho has a variety of new specialty crops or crops that don't fall into the standard definition of commodity crops that have historically been dealt with in the Farm Bill. I think you'll see rural economic development discussed and brought forth in the Farm Bill. I'm anxious to develop a guaranteed loan program that is bigger and directs new technology to agriculture, such as the ability to get guaranteed loans for anaerobic digestion to resolve the waste problems we have with the growing dairy industry of our state, and those kinds of things. How it will specifically address water is yet to be seen. Water is not something that is usually addressed that specifically within a Farm Bureau Bill. As you know, it's mostly Bureau of Reclamation, Department of Interior that has some water authority in our state, but the primary water authority rests with the state law and the state legislature. So a combination of those things, but I think you'll see a Farm Bill this time on time early in the 07 time frame.
Another issue that's important to Idaho farmers and ranchers and loggers and really anyone in Idaho that uses water is the reform of the Endangered Species Act. So up in Salmon, Richard would like to know, are you making any progress in bringing the ESA into the 21st century? This law is so out of place that it needs major changes to make sure we can bring back active management to our national forest.
Well, Richard, it is a great and important question, and it is one that has more impact on Idaho now than nearly any form of public policy. I agree with you. It needs to be reformed. It should have been reformed 10 or 15 years ago. Just like the inability to delist the wolf in Idaho right now and therefore have to go through extraordinary measures to get some degree of control over the wolf management is a perfect example of a problem. The idea that all waters of our state all of a sudden have gained the jurisdictional control by a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service instead of the state of Idaho is another good example of the Endangered Species Act going substantially further than I think its original authors ever intended it to be. The House has proposed and passed significant new reform provisions for the Endangered Species Act. Senator Crapo and Senator Blanche Lincoln are working together in the Energy and Public Works Committee, Environment and Public Works Committee here in the Senate, to try to bring out a bill. I hope this year is the year in which we reform the Endangered Species Act. Of course, House and Senate would then have to come together to see what we could successfully accomplish. But there is greater growth in the effort to reform endangered species now than we've seen in a long time, largely because people like you and others are beginning to recognize nationally that it is a law that has been taken too far.
Great. On to another issue, which is our economy. Idaho is currently experiencing some of the lowest unemployment rates in the U.S. We're hovering below 4%. Most economists would call that full employment. The problem with full employment, though, is that there's always someone looking for a job. And Peter in Meridian is one of those folks, and he asked, as an unemployed Idahoan, I'm concerned with the means of reporting this data. The numbers seem to only reflect the actual total numbers. Do these numbers account for all Idahoans who are unemployed? And he wants to know what's being done to bring more businesses to Idaho and eliminate offshoring of jobs.
Idaho has one of the strongest economies it has ever had. And you're right, the unemployment figures would suggest that we are fully employed. By definition, as Dan has just explained, that is the case. Does that mean that there aren't people out there looking for work? No, it doesn't. And new economies come to Idaho. As you know, Micron just announced 900 new jobs for the Boise Valley, and that's going to spur more new jobs. The growth in the U.S. economy is phenomenal at this moment. Does outsourcing occur? Yes, it does. Do new jobs occur in our nation? Yes. 25 years ago, we were 25% of the world economy. Today, we are 26% of the world economy, and that includes now the tremendous growth in China and India and other places around the world. So we are growing just as rapidly, creating as many new jobs as any other country of the world, and Idaho, fortunately enough, has been a big part of it. Sometimes if the job you're interested in doesn't quite fit you, you either have to move to find the job that fits you, or you have to adjust yourself to fit the jobs that are available in the marketplace. But clearly, Idaho is very fortunate at this moment with the growth that we have. Other states have not done as well. And I'm always sorry to hear that there are people out of work looking for work. But that's also part of the way our economy works. And I'm sure that there's something out there for everyone.
Great. Well, speaking of jobs and speaking of people moving to find work, a number of Idahoans wrote in about illegal immigration, including we have Ryan from Lewiston, Kristen from Idaho Falls, and James from Nampa and Indian Valley. But in the interest of time, the question from Daniel and Marjorie from Idaho Falls best sums up the group's sentiment. And they want to know what your position is on illegal immigration, and don't you think employees should be fined for employing them?
Well, I am strongly opposed to illegal immigration, but I support legal immigration. It's part of our country's history. It's part of our country's strength, and it is an important part of our job base. Idaho agriculture, Idaho nurserymen, a lot of businesses in Idaho and around the country could not exist today without some form of foreign nationals being employed by them. But we want those foreign nationals to come legally to our country. So what are we doing about it? Well, first and foremost, we've invested heavily in the controlling of our borders since 9/11. 9/11 was kind of a wake-up call that for the last 30 years we've been asleep at the switch, not controlling our borders and letting the problem exist. And we've begun to control our borders. I've moved very aggressively in that area. In fact, it's called the Craig Byrd Bill that's put literally hundreds of millions of dollars of training and development to hire border patrol and control, and that's happening. What do we do about those who hire illegals? Most employers do not knowingly hire illegals. When somebody comes in and they have a green card and they have a Social Security card, is it the job of the local employer to spend a week doing background checks with the federal government or do just as he or she would do with a U.S. citizen? And that is, you got a Social Security card, then I'll employ you if you're qualified to do the work. But if you got a green card and a Social Security card and you're a foreign national, I'll employ you if you can do the work. No, I don't think we ought to sue local employers because they believe they are hiring legal people. That's the responsibility of the federal government to make sure those who have a green card and a Social Security card are legal foreign nationals. And that's why we are moving very rapidly in the area of immigration reform right now to get that under control. But it's a problem that we've let be out of control for way too long.
Great. And speaking of national security, Barbara from Caldwell wants to know, why did you vote against the Patriot Act? She thinks it was for the protection of the public and it's not a problem unless you have something to hide.
Yeah. Well, Barbara from Caldwell, would you like the federal government to break into your house and steal your records or copies of them and strip your hard drive and never tell you about it for whatever reason? That's a problem, isn't it? No, you think you're, as a citizen, you have rights. And as a citizen, you have rights to not have your government do certain things to you. And I agree with that. At the same time, I do support a Patriot Act, and I did vote for the last Patriot Act, but I support one that makes sure there is a check and a balanced system. The federal government ought to have the latitude to search for and gain information if they have strong reason to believe that somebody's engaged in terrorist activities, and there's a pattern there. But to do so, what we've historically done is go to a judge and say to the judge, we have reason to believe, and here's the evidence that this person is doing certain illegal things, and we want the right to go in and search. And in most instances, that's been the check and balance kind of thing. Or how would you like somebody to come into your local library and say, give me the records. I want to see if so-and-so checked out or if Barbara checked out all these books and why she might be checking them out. And, oh, by the way, librarian, you can't call Barbara and tell her that we ask for this information. We've gagged you from doing that. These are certain kinds of government activities that, while we will allow them, there have to be checks and balances. I will vote to reauthorize the Patriots Act when we get those kinds of checks and balances in place to guard our constitutional rights, and at the same time, recognize that we've got to be secure. Thomas Jefferson said, are we going to give up our freedoms to assure our security? It's a balance that our Constitution guarantees us. Let's make sure our Constitution remains strongly in place.
Great. Well, we do have just a couple more minutes, so let's tackle two more quick questions. On an issue that affects every one of us, Michael writes from Meridian, it appears that Social Security for future seniors is in real financial trouble. What is the U.S. Senate doing to protect the future of Social Security?
Well, Michael, it depends on how much of a future senior you are. If you're on Social Security now, it's going to be stable for the balance of your life. If you're going on to it now, Social Security, as it currently is stable probably for the next 20 to 25 years, maybe 30 years, depending on rates of employment and the economy and all of those kinds of things. When we talk about Social Security reform, we're really talking about the future for young people who are investing in Social Security today. And is it going to go bankrupt? No. We can leave it alone as it is. And it will pay out for the next 25 to 30 years. And if we don't raise taxes on the citizens, the workforce, then it will still be there, but it may pay the recipient a little less over a period of time because the cash flow isn't coming in to honor the total amount that a given recipient might think they deserve. Our big problem today is that these baby boomers, and I'm one of them, are probably going to live into our 90s. Social Security only expected to live into our late 60s. And therefore, there's going to be one worker out there or two paying for one recipient or one and a half recipients of Social Security. We have a problem. It's a, you know, program that was developed in the 30s, so it's a 70-year-old program that deserves to be modernized. And we can do that and protect our current recipients, and that's our job.
Well, one last question with your hat on as chairman of the Senate's Veterans Affairs Committee. Ed from Post Falls would like to know if he would support concurrent payment of VA disability and military retirement at any level of disability.
Well, Ed, I do support concurrent receipts. The Congress voted that in several years ago because of veterans groups anxious and lobbying for that benefit. But because it shifted the payment of retirement versus disability from the Veterans Administration to the Department of Defense, we bumped up the cost of defense by billions of dollars for this new retirement program. So, yes, you're going to get your disability payment to all levels. It will depend upon the individual, and you're going to get retirement. But because of the cost, we are phasing it in over a period of time. I believe the phase-in is about a 5 or 6 year period to get to this new program. Some will say, well, it was a benefit that was in that they were eligible for at the time. No, it is the it is a new definition of what is a disability versus a retirement, and therefore it is a new payment process that has to be phased in to be affordable.
Great. Well, with that, we're out of time for this pod chat. We had a tremendous response from people asking questions, so we didn't have time to answer all of them. So we may be able to cover them in our next pod chat, which will be in February. So, but for listeners who want to get an answer from Senator Craig, you can always email him through his website at craig.senate.gov. There's a tremendous number of issue briefings on there that cover everything from adoption to veterans that may answer your questions. And for those that would like to ask a question for a future pod chat, again, visit craig.senate.gov/podchat.htm.